Taking early Nesbitt along with them was a complication in the plan Scratch had come up with, but it couldn't be helped. It wasn't really safe to leave him behind, because there was no telling when some of Gentry's men might come along and find him, and at the same time discover that Brubaker had taken the prisoners across the river at that spot. And no matter what else, killing the boy in cold blood wasn't an option, despite what they'd made early believe. Nightfall found them making camp several miles south of the Red River. Early had complained a lot, but at least he wasn't as obscene about it as Kara and the other two had been during the early stages of the journey. He had gotten on Brubaker's nerves enough, though, that the deputy had threatened to gag him if he didn't shut up. After that, Early had just muttered and mumbled. Scratch took Kara when she had to go visit the bushes that evening.
We're in Texas now like you want it. When are we gonna make our break for it, Scratch?
I was thinking maybe tonight.
Oh, thank the Lord. I wasn't sure I could take one more day being cooped up inside that damn wagon. Listen, you'll have to knock out Dayton and Jim, otherwise they'll raise a ruckus when they see that I'm escaping and they ain't.
I can do that. You know, I've been wondering, don't they know where that hideout is too?
Sure, they were riding with Hank back in those days, just like I was.
Won't they figure out where you're headed and tell Brubaker where to find you?
Not hardly. They'll still be hoping that Hank will get them loose somehow. And they'll know that if they spill the location of that cache to the law, he'd kill them faster than some judge ever could. They'll wait until he rescues them, then tell Hank what happened and where they think I went. But by then it'll be too late, even if Hank does free them. And if he doesn't, well, they might break down on the gallows and tell about it. But it'd be too late to stop us by then, too.
Huh. You thought it all out.
Of course I had. I learned a lot while I was riding with Hank. He's pretty smart.
All you needed was to figure out which one of us was most likely to help you so you'd know who to bat your eyes at and play up to.
That wasn't like that, honey. I never would have said anything to start with to Brubaker or your friend Bo. I've known plenty of stiff-necked, upright bastards like them. They're too blasted stubborn to know what's good for them. A man like you, you're smart enough to see the possibilities. That's why I liked you right from the start. Well, once we got past that part about trying to cut you with a razor blade anyway.
You are a caution, Carol of Chance.
You don't know just how right you are.
What about that kid? You know him from when you were still with the gang?
Early?
Kara emerged from the brush and shrugged her shoulders as much as the heavy chains would let her.
I remember seeing him around a few times. Don't know that I ever talked to him. There are always kids sucking around Hank wanting to be desperados. He said that was just part of being famous.
I may have to knock him out, too.
Go right ahead. Kill him if you need to. He don't mean nothing to me. We better get back. We've been out here for a while, and we don't want them getting suspicious when we're this close to making our move.
Yeah, you're right.
Back at the wagon, Early was complaining because his hands were still tied behind him.
As long as my feet are tied, I can't go anywhere. So why can't my hands be tied in front of me?
Where you can grab a gun if any of us was foolish enough to get within reach of you? Not bloody likely, kid.
Look, Marshal, I'm starting to think that maybe I ain't so keen on being an outlaw after all. If you turn me loose, I give you my word, I'll go back to Tioga, and you'd never see or hear from me again. And I wouldn't help Hank Gentry find you, neither.
Forget it. You should have thought of that before you started running with that no-account trash. What I'm gonna do, since we need supplies anyways because the trip is taking longer than I expected, is to go to Gainesville. We can provision up there. I'll leave you two locked in the city jail with instructions for the marshal to hold you there until I wire him to let you loose.
You can't do that! Why? I didn't even break any laws. I was just sitting there smoking a cigarette when that old galoot jumped on me like to bust all my ribs.
You've admitted knowing Gentry. That makes you a witness, and I can hold a witness in custody for as long as I damn well please.
But it ain't fair!
Goes to show you what a babe in the woods you really are, Nesbitt. Hollering about fair. There ain't no fair in this world. There's only the law. Them that follow it, and them that don't.
I'll stand first watch tonight. Scratch, you want second turn?
Well, sure. That'll leave you to finish up, 42.
Sure. Fine by me.
I reckon I'll turn in then. I want to be wide awake when it's my turn to stand guard.
Scratch wrapped up in his blankets and fell asleep almost right away, without even thinking about what would happen later. On the frontier, a man grabbed whatever chances he could to rest. After several hours, Bo woke him to take over. The fire had burned down quite a bit. Bo had fed it just enough wood to keep it going and provide a slight bit of warmth. Mostly, though, it was another cold winter night. The wagon was dark and quiet. Brubaker lay motionless in his blankets. Not far away, Early Nesbit was wrapped up in blankets as well, sleeping restlessly because it was difficult to get comfortable when you were tied hand and foot.
Anything unusual going on?
Not a thing. Night's as quiet as can be.
That's just the way I like it.
Taking his rifle, Scratch went over and sat down on the wagon tongue. He watched Bo crawl into the other bedroll, turn to face away from the fire, and pillow his head on his saddle. Within moments, Bo was breathing deeply, steadily. Scratch waited some more. When half an hour had passed, he stood up. Moving with the stealth and silence that decades of experience had taught him, he approached the recumbent Brubaker. The deputy didn't stir as Scratch lifted his rifle and then brought the butt crashing down. Swiftly, wasting not even a second, Scratch whirled away from Brubaker and took a couple of quick steps that brought him within reach of Bo. The rifle rose and fell again, brutally. Then Scratch turned back and bent over to reach into Brubaker's coat pocket. He brought out the heavy key that unlocked the padlocks. He had just started toward the wagon when Early Nesbit started up off the ground.
What the?
Scratch's boot crashed against the young man's jaw. Scratch went to the wagon, thrust the key into the padlock, and turned it. When he opened the door, Kara was already awake and waiting for him.
Knock out these two quick!
No need. Bo and Brubaker dead, a stove in their skulls. Got to thinking about it. Decided why should we take chances.
He killed them?
Yeah.
What's going on here?
I'm getting away. That's what's going on, you damn fool.
Scratch unlocked the shackles on her ankles, then the ones on her wrists.
Hey, let us loose too!
Sorry, boys. Scratch and I are the only ones riding away from here tonight.
You bitch! You double-crossing bitch!
I'll see you in hell for this!
Not if I see you first. Let's get out of here.
You'll have to lead the way. Now, I don't know this part of Texas.
Fine, come on.
She climbed down from the wagon without any trouble. Scratch replaced the padlock on the door and snapped it shut. He gave it a tug to make sure it was secure.
We're gonna be rich, Scratch, just you and me. I'm taking your friend's horse, all right?
That's fine with me. He don't need it anymore.
Moving quickly, he saddled his own horse and Bo's mount. They climbed onto the animals.
Let's ride.
When the sound of rapid hoofbeats had dwindled away completely, Bo pushed his blankets aside and stood up.
They're gone, 42.
This is the biggest damn fool stunt I ever did see. I don't know how in blazes I let you two Texans talk me into it.
That was Scratch's idea. But you got to admit, using Kara to lead us right to all that loot the gang stashed, probably the only way the law would ever find it.
I know, but he came damn near to actually hit me with that rifle butt. If he'd missed a little and hit me instead of my saddle, my skull would be cracked by now.
Bo checked on Early. The young man was unconscious and had a bruise starting up on his jaw, but he would be all right.
Let us out of here, you bastards! Shut up in there, or else I won't feed you breakfast in the morning!
A stunned silence came over the wagon.
Marshal? Is that you?
Who the hell else would it be? Colonel George Armstrong Guster? Now settle down, the both of you!
That treacherous little Hellcat ain't half as smart as she thinks she is.
Maybe not, but you ain't either. Shut up and go back to sleep.
Brubaker left the prisoners and walked back over to where Bo was standing and gazing off in the direction Scratch and Kara had taken when they rode away from the camp.
Judge Parker's gonna have my hide for going off on my own like this. And if those prisoners manage to escape...
They won't. The county jail in Gainesville is plenty sturdy, and Gentry won't have any reason to look for them there. They'll be fine for a week or so until we get back. And then we'll have not only Kara, but all the loot that Gentry hid before he headed for Indian territory, too. The judge will understand.
Maybe. Or maybe that gal will outsmart us and we'll all wind up dead.
As far as Scratch could tell from the stars, he and Kara angled southwest when they rode away from the camp where they had left Bo and Brubaker pretending to be dead. Everything had gone off pretty much the way the three of them had planned during the past few days in quiet conversations out of earshot of the wagon. Brubaker hadn't been easy to convince when Scratch first laid out the idea. He had insisted in no uncertain terms that Scratch was plumb loco, completely out of his head, to even be considering letting Carol a chance escape, no matter what the reason. But in the end, he had gone along with the plan. Knowing that she had a rifle within easy reach made Scratch's skin crawl a little. Maybe she'd been telling the truth when she claimed that she had never killed anybody, but he wasn't going to bet his life on it. Although, Scratch mused, that was sort of what he was doing. Kara had ridden hard and set a fast pace when they left the camp behind, even though she didn't have any reason to expect pursuit. Probably that was just instinct. Now she had slowed Bo's horse to a more reasonable gait, especially considering the fact that they couldn't always see where they were going.
How come you don't know this part of the country? You're from Texas, aren't you?
Yeah, but from down around Hallettsville in Victoria. That's pretty near 400 miles from here. Not only that, but Bo and me left Texas a long time ago. We ain't been back much since.
I'm sure I can find the place. I helped Hank pick it out. Just be glad it's winter. During the summer, the rattlers are mighty thick out there.
I ain't fond of snakes. I won't bother them. They don't bother me.
They'll be all curled up in their holes at this time of year.
Like in that cave where the loot's stashed?
Don't worry, I'll go in first if you're scared.
No, I never said I was scared. Just that I don't like snakes.
They rode on through the night. At one point, when they were on high ground, Scratch caught sight of some lights several miles to the east. That would be Gainesville. Bo and Brubaker would be there first thing in the morning, locking Lowe, Elam, and Early Nesbitt in the jail. The county sheriff might not be too fond of the idea, but with Brubaker being a federal marshal, he wouldn't have much choice but to go along with it. Finally, Kara brought Bo's horse to a stop in a thick stand of trees.
We'll make camp here. We need to get some sleep, and then we can push on in the morning.
You sleep, and I'll stand guard. I got some sleep earlier before Bo woke me up.
We'll both sleep. Hell, Scratch, nobody's coming after us. Nobody knows where we are. We're as safe as we can be.
Part of Scratch wanted to stay awake all the time Kara was awake, just so he'd be ready if she tried to double-cross him, but he knew that wasn't going to be possible. Sooner or later, he'd have to trust her, at least a little, so it might as well be now, he decided. And if she cut his throat while he was asleep, well, he knew that Bo would catch up to her sooner or later and settle the score for him. As he was picketing and unsaddling the horses, he realized they only had one bedroll, his, which he'd picked up and lashed on behind his saddle before they left camp. That would have been fine if they had taken turns sleeping, as Scratch had sort of figured they would do. But from what Kara had said, she planned on them sharing the blankets. Under other circumstances, that might not have been so bad, although Kara was young enough that that would have made Scratch a little uncomfortable. But her youth, combined with the fact that she was an outlaw and quite possibly a murderer, gave him the fantods for sure. Still, he didn't see what else he could do except play along with whatever she wanted. She had already crawled into the bedroll when he finished with the horses. She held back the blankets for him.
Here.
Scratch took off his hat and boots, then unbuckled his gun belt and coiled it around the holstered Remingtons. He set the revolvers on the ground next to the blankets, within easy reach. He slid into the bedroll with Kara. He had put his saddle down for a pillow, and as he rested his head on it, she snuggled against him and laid her head on his shoulder. Her curly blonde hair tickled his cheek as she moved closer to him.
Now, you know, this saddle of mine's older than you are. You know that, don't you?
Oh, hush. I'm tired and it's damn cold. I've just about froze every night since we left Fort Smith because I wasn't just about to curl up with those two varmints I was locked in the wagon with. I figure with you it's different.
Different, huh?
Well, you're older. Maybe not too old. We'll see about that later. Right now, I just need some sleep.
Yeah, me too. Night.
Night.
Scratch was cold when he woke up in the morning, which meant two things, one good and one maybe not so good. The good thing was that he woke up at all, which meant he was still alive. Kara hadn't killed him while he slept after all. The fact that he was cold meant that she was no longer huddled in the blankets next to him. He sat up quickly, thinking that she might have slipped away and taken both horses with her, leaving him stranded here. He hated to think that she could do such a thing without waking him, but maybe it was possible.
Good morning.
He heard the crackle of a fire and suddenly smelled coffee brewing. When he turned his head, she was there, hunkered on the other side of a small campfire. She had gotten the coffee pot from his gear and started the Arbuckles boiling.
Where'd you get the water?
There's a little creek just the other side of these trees. and I told you good morning. You ain't very polite, old man.
Good morning. You sleep all right?
Better than I have in a while. You?
Just fine.
You want me to fry up some bacon? I'm not very good at it. I can make coffee, but that's about all. So if you're thinking that just because I'm a woman, I'm here to wait on you hand and foot.
Now, the thought never crossed my mind.
Good. We'll head towards Decatur today. I want to stay away from big towns like Fort Worth. Too many blasted people there. Somebody might recognize me.
Now, you lead the way, darling. I'll go along with you.
He climbed out of the bedroll, his muscles creaking a little and his breath fogging in front of his face in the cold air, and got busy frying bacon and cooking some biscuits. They had slept until after dawn, and the sun was well up by the time they finished breakfast and were ready to ride. They followed the river southward.
We had a boat, we could float down to where we're going.
Except when it's flooding. The Trinity's not deep enough in these parts to float anything more than a little rowboat. Anyway, I'd rather be on horseback. I don't like boats. I can't swim.
You can.
Never learned. There was no place around where I grew up that was big enough to swim in. We had a little pond on our farm, but it was barely deep enough for the crawdads to paddle around. One time up in the Nations, Hank wanted to go skinny dipping in the creek. I told him I'd take my clothes off, but I wasn't gonna swim.
You were quite a hellion, weren't you?
I still am. You got a problem with that, Scratch?
Nope, not me.
They had gone only another mile or so when the horse Kara was riding suddenly broke its gait and started limping. She reined in and glared in annoyance.
What's wrong with this jughead?
Scratch swung down from his saddle.
Let me take a look.
He lifted the horse's hoof that seemed to be causing the trouble and studied it. Taking a clasp knife from his pocket, he opened it and pried at the horseshoe with the blade.
Shoe's loose and it picked up a rock. We need to find a blacksmith.
Can't you take care of it?
Maybe, if I had the right tools, which I don't. Anyway, we'll be better off letting somebody who knows what he's doing handle it. You don't want to be left a foot out here, and if we have to ride double, we couldn't get away very fast if we needed to.
I wanted to steer clear of Thames until we got to the hideout.
Yeah, I know, but this can't be helped. We'll see if we can find some little settlement where there's no law and nobody will know us.
All right, all right. There's a wide place in the road over that way called a bar. Might be a blacksmith there. We needed to start heading in that direction anyway if we're going to avoid Fort Worth.
That sounds good. Why don't you climb up here with me so your horse won't have to carry you? We can ride double for that far.
Kara agreed with that idea. She dismounted and handed Scratch the reins to Bo's horse. Scratch took his left foot out of the stirrup and let her use it to swing up behind him. When she was settled down behind the saddle and had her arms around his waist, he heeled his mount into motion again and started off, leading Bo's horse. Kara told him which way to go. This was still wooded, hilly country, although not as rugged as it would be farther west, where the gentry gang's old hideout was located. It took them about an hour to reach O'Bar, which turned out to be a one-street settlement with a couple of blocks of businesses and a few dozen houses scattered around its outskirts. Scratch spotted a church steeple that stuck up on the other side of some cottonwood and post oak trees lining the banks of a creek just west of town.
You see a blacksmith shop?
Scratch nodded to a building on the left side of the street. It had double doors that stood open, and smoke came from a chimney in the middle of the roof. Scratch reined to a halt in front of the doors. Kara slid down from the horse first, then he dismounted too, as a stocky man with rusty hair and a close-cropped beard emerged from the building.
I got a horse with a loose shoe that picked up a rock. I got the rock out, but the shoe still needs work. You reckon you can take care of it for us?
Not a problem. I got one job to finish up first, but I can get to it in a little while. That be all right?
Scratch turned to look at Kara, but she wasn't there. He stiffened in surprise for a second before he spotted her walking across the street.
Yeah, that'll be fine, thanks.
She was headed for a squat building made of red sandstone. The place had a tiled roof that was a darker shade of red. A sign on the overhang above the flat flagstone porch proclaimed the place to be the Red Top Cafe and Saloon. Several horses were tied at the hitch racks in front of the porch. Scratch's long legs allowed him to catch up to Kara before she reached the cafe.
I thought you didn't want to call attention to yourself.
I'm already here anyway. Figured it wouldn't do any harm to get a meal that amounted to more than just bacon and biscuits.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
He opened the door, and they stepped into warmth that was thick with the delicious aromas of food cooking. The Red Top was more saloon than cafe, Scratch saw. There was a lunch counter to the left that formed an L with the long side of it running toward the back of the low-ceilinged room and serving as a bar. The right-hand wall had several booths with leather-covered seats, and round tables were scattered over the open area between the wall and the bar. A poker game with four cowboys playing was going on at one of those tables. A couple of punchers were at the bar nursing mugs of beer, while two men sat at the lunch counter with plates of food in front of them. Out of habit, Scratch quickly scanned the faces of all the men in the place. He didn't see anybody he recognized. The patrons glanced at the newcomers, curious as anybody would be about strangers in their midst, and several of the cowboys took a second, longer, more appreciative look at Kara. Scratch didn't think that any of them seemed to recognize her. Like all young men, they were just interested in the sight of a pretty girl. Kara sat down on a stool at the lunch counter. Scratch took the stool beside her. A short, burly man with salt and pepper hair rested thick-fingered hands on the counter.
Howdy, folks. What can I do y'all for?
I'd love a nice, juicy steak with all the trimmings.
I reckon we can do that for y'all. How about you, old-timer?
Steak sounds good to me, too.
Coming up.
If the idea was for you not to attract much attention, you ain't going about it the right way.
Scratch nodded toward the cowboys watching them. Kara gave a toss of her head that made her mass of blonde hair swirl enticingly around her shoulders.
Oh, them? To tell you the truth, I don't even notice it that much anymore. Men have been looking at me like that since I was 14.
Scratch didn't believe for a second that she didn't notice the attention. She saw it all right, and she liked it. But that wasn't important at the moment. They would eat their meals, pick up Bo's horse when that shoe had been repaired or replaced, and then shake off the dust of Obar's single street as quickly as possible. At least, that was the plan. But one of the poker players at the table threw in his hand in disgust.
I'm out.
Cocking his Stetson at a jaunty angle, he sauntered toward the lunch counter.
Hello, sweet thing. You don't live around here, do you? Don't remember seeing you around these parts before.
You know everybody who lives around here, do you?
I can promise you if you lived in Obar, I'd know it. Fact of the matter is, I'd have been courting you before now. My name's Joe Reynolds.
Well, you're right, Mr. Reynolds. I don't live around here. We're just passing through.
Traveling with your grandpa, are you?
Oh, he's not my grandpa. This here is my husband.
Husband? This old codger? You can't be serious.
He's all the man I need and then some.
Well, all I got to say is that is the biggest purdy waste of a beautiful woman I ever did see. Why don't you let this gal spend a little time with a real man, Gramps?
Listen, son.
Don't worry, honey. I can handle this. I reckon you're the real man you think I should spend a little time with.
That's right.
Yeah, I can tell by looking at you that it'd be a little time, all right. A real little time.
Hey, what do you mean by that, gal?
You know what I mean.
I don't appreciate some stranger talking to me that way.
Do you appreciate this?
Before Reynolds knew what was going on, Kara had snaked the young cowboy's gun out of its holster. She jammed the muzzle up under Reynolds' chin and eared back the hammer.
What are you doing? Are you loco?
Loco? You come over here and look at me like I'm a whore instead of a lady, and you insult this fine gentleman and you ask me if I'm loco. You're the one who's loco, buckaroo. And it seems to me like you need to listen in manners, too.
Now, we don't need to do this. Why don't you just let that hammer down easy-like and we'll get out of here?
Not until we've had our steaks. Which are gonna be on you, aren't they, cowboy?
You heard what the lady said, Larry. And the stakes are on me.
Look, ma'am, we don't want any trouble here.
There's no trouble.
With her thumb on the hammer, she eased it down as Scratch had suggested. Again, she moved so fast it was hard to follow what she was doing as she lowered the gun and slid it back into Reynolds' holster.
Joe here is just leaving. But he'll pay you later for our meals.
Yeah, I sure will.
But his pride wouldn't just let him turn tail and run. Reynolds looked at Scratch, and the belligerent expression appeared again on his face.
Listen, mister, you need to get this woman of yours under control!
Scratch stood up and moved a step away from the counter so he could face the cowboy squarely.
I like her just fine the way she is.
Reynolds' gaze dropped to the pair of ivory-handled Remingtons on Scratch's hips. It was pretty obvious that the silver-haired Texan knew how to use the guns.
All right, it's none of my business if you want to let her act like a hellcat. I gotta get back to work.
Them steaks y'all wanted ought to be just about ready. I'll go fetch them.
Much obliged. What was the idea of that little fandango?
I just can't stand cocky cowboys like that. They rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but now folks around here gonna remember us. That ain't what we wanted.
It doesn't matter. Tomorrow we'll be where we're going, and after that we won't have to worry about anything. We'll be rich.
Now, being rich don't always mean the trouble can't find you.
I plan on going so far away that nobody will ever find me.
The counterman returned with their food. The steaks were fried just right, and the potatoes and other fixings were good too. The way things had turned out, Scratch would have rather they had just waited at the blacksmith shop. But he had to admit that this was the best meal he'd had since leaving Fort Smith. When they were finished, Kara spoke to the counterman.
You won't have any trouble collecting from Reynolds, will you?
No need for that. It's all on the house.
Now, you don't have to do that.
It's my pleasure.
Well, if you're sure.
Scratch figured the only thing the man was really sure of was that he wanted the two of them out of his place before any real hell broke loose. Scratch helped Kara down from the stool, and they walked arm in arm out of the Red Top. Together, they angled across the street toward the blacksmith shop. As they stepped through the open double doors into the shaded interior of the shop, Scratch looked around for the proprietor. He didn't see the man, but he spotted their horses standing tied to a post. He picked up the hoof that had caused the trouble and checked it. The horse had a new shoe nailed onto that hoof.
Hey, anybody home? We need to know what we owe you. We're ready to settle up.
You'll settle up all right, you old bastard. You and the bitch both.
Joe Reynolds stepped out of the shadows behind the forge with a rifle in his hands. Scratch reacted instinctively to the threat, shoving Kara aside with his left hand while his right dipped to the Remington on that side and drew the long-barreled revolver. The bullet punched into Reynolds' chest and drove him halfway around. He dropped his gun and crumpled.
That stranger shot Joe! Get him!
That was what Scratch had been afraid of. Reynolds had friends here. The silver-haired Texan and Kara didn't. As he turned toward the doorway, Scratch saw most of the townspeople scattered. Three remained, and Scratch recognized them as the men who had been playing poker with Reynolds in the Red Top. They looked like cowboys, too, and probably rode for the same spread as him. The two of them had their guns out, and the third man was trying to draw his. Scratch palmed out his left-hand Remington. With his hands full, he triggered a pair of swift shots from both guns. The bullets smashed into the men who already had their guns drawn and sent them reeling backward. The third man had finally cleared leather, but as Scratch turned toward him, a rifle shot cracked, and the man was knocked backward, his Colt flying from his hand as his arms flung out. He landed hard on his back in the street, dust flying up around him. Scratch glanced over and saw that Kara had grabbed the rifle Reynolds had dropped. The blonde's lips were drawn back from her teeth in a grimace of hate. Smoke curled from the repeater's muzzle. Reynolds was down, lying on his side, apparently not breathing. The other two men Scratch had shot had dropped their guns and fallen in the street. One of them clutched his side as he writhed around in the dirt. The other lay still, but his chest was rising and falling. Kara worked the lever on the rifle to throw another shell into the chamber. She looked like she was ready to put some more slugs into the fallen cowboys, just on general principles.
Wait a minute. Don't shoot anymore, Kara.
Some of them are still alive.
Yeah, I know that, but we don't want to kill any more of them than we have to.
Anybody gets in my way, they deserve killing.
Keeping one eye on Kara, because there was no telling what she might do, Scratch took a closer look at Reynolds and confirmed that the cowboy was dead.
You just stay here. I'm gonna check on those other fellas.
Be careful that somebody else in this hick town doesn't try to shoot you from ambush.
Scratch was well aware of that danger. Before he emerged from the blacksmith shop, he looked up and down the street as best he could. He didn't see anybody moving around. The citizens of Obar seemed to have retreated into the buildings in case any more bullets started to fly. Scratch stepped out into the street. With both Remingtons still in his hands, he approached the man Kara had shot. The man's glassy eyes, staring sightlessly at the sky, left no doubt that he was dead. The man who'd been writhing had gone still. He was still breathing, though, and as far as Scratch could tell without really examining the wound, he thought that a bullet had just plowed a furrow in the man's side. He had lost some blood and likely passed out because of it, but he ought to survive. He wasn't so sure about the fourth man who'd been shot through the body. He seemed to be breathing without too much strain, though, so maybe, with luck, he would pull through too. Scratch was glad to see that. He wasn't about to feel guilty for shooting any hombre who was trying to shoot him, but even so, He'd just as soon not be part of a massacre if he could avoid it. Scratch heard a door open and glanced up to see two men emerge from the red top. He recognized one of them as the counterman from the cafe and saloon, and the other man was the stocky, red-headed blacksmith. Both of them wore grim expressions and brandished shotguns as if they intended to splatter Scratch all over the street. Scratch stiffened and brought up his Remingtons.
You fellas hold it right there. I don't want to kill you.
The two men stopped short and lowered their scatter guns.
Wait a minute, mister. We don't mean you any harm. We were coming to help you.
What do you mean? Help me how?
In case some of those varmints are still alive and might try to shoot you again.
Now wait a minute. You ain't on their side?
That son of a bitch Reynolds came into the shop and clouted me on the head when I wasn't looking. Knocked me out and dragged me into the back so he could hide there and get the drop on you, mister. When I came to and realized what was going on, I went out the back door and ran around to the cafe to get some help. Larry loaned me a greener.
So you ain't friends with this low-down bunch?
Not by a long shot. They've been coming into town, getting drunk, and causing trouble for months now. They've shot up the place and hoorahed folks more than once.
Well, then why didn't you get the law on them or do something about it yourselves?
Oh, we're not gunfighters. They're probably not really good enough to call them by that name either. But they're slicker on the draw and better with their guns than anybody else around here.
And as for the law, there's a deputy sheriff who comes out this way from Fort Worth every now and then. But Reynolds and his friends were always on their best behavior when he was around. He wasn't of a mind to do anything about it.
All right. Now, two of these fellows are shot up but still alive. You got a doctor around here who can take a look at them?
Somebody's already gone to fetch Doc Stewart. He'll be here directly.
Well, the other two need burying.
We can take care of that. I build coffins, too.
I saw that you changed the shoe on that horse before Reynolds buffaloed you.
That's right. I just finished up the job when the son of a bitch came in.
What do we owe you?
Oh, not a blame thing, mister. We're square. It's worth the cost of a horseshoe and a little labor to get that bunch cleaned up. Now old Bar can go back to being a nice, friendly place to live.
Scratch turned to Kara, who stood in the doorway of the blacksmith shop holding Reynolds' rifle, still looking like she really wanted to shoot somebody.
We better be moving on, and we'll leave that rifle here.
Yeah, I don't reckon we need it now, but it sure came in handy for a minute.
It did.
A few minutes later, Kara followed a trail that dipped down to cross a wooden bridge over the creek, then climbed to go past the church Scratch had spotted earlier.
Where are we headed now?
We'll camp between here and Weatherford. And tomorrow we'll cut north of there and make for the hills where the hideout is. We ought to be there by late afternoon, and then we'll be rich.
Can't be soon enough to suit me.
Brubaker and Beau had left the wagon at a stable in Gainesville, since they would need it when they returned to pick up Lowe and Elam. Brubaker planned to leave Early Nesbitt locked up there long enough to let him get to Tyler with his prisoners, and then the local law could let Nesbitt go as far as he was concerned. From Gainesville, they rode south to Denton and spent the night there, then angled southwest toward Decatur and Weatherford. The Cross Timbers was nice enough country in the summer, with its wooded hills, wide valleys, and abundance of creeks. Right now, though, in the middle of winter, and with this part of Texas suffering through a terrible drought as well, all the vegetation was dead. The landscape was parched and ugly. If it was like that farther west, where the terrain was more rugged to start with, things were going to be pretty harsh.
What's this country like where we're going?
Rough. Lots of gullies and bluffs, thick brush, rocky ground, and plenty of snakes and scorpions. Although we shouldn't have to worry about varmints like that at this time of the year.
What's it good for? From the sound of it, not much.
Some of the valleys are fertile enough for farming, or at least they were before this drought. For the most part, though, it's ranching country. Longhorns are hardy enough that they'd do well just about anywhere. There are quite a few spreads scattered through the hills. Over time, there'll be more. Wasn't that many years ago that the Comanches represented quite a threat. Anybody who tried to settle west of the Brazos River was running a mighty big risk. Plenty of ranches were raided and burned out.
Folks kept moving out there anyway, though, didn't they?
That's what people do. Pioneers, anyway. Push out ahead and make their own way.
They spent the second night in Weatherford, and when Beau got up, he went downstairs to the hotel dining room to find Brubaker already there, sipping coffee.
That wind's blowing like a son of a bitch out there.
It'll do that, especially from this time of year on through the spring. We'll have to hold on to our hats today.
We'll catch up to Morton and the LeChance woman today. That's what we'd better do.
That's the plan. Scratch will find a way to signal us.
He damned well better. If he decides to take off with that gal and the loot, I'll hunt him down. And you'd be wise not to stop me, Creel.
I'm not worried about that. Scratch isn't going to double-cross us.
They ate breakfast at the hotel, then paid their bill and walked down the street to the livery stable where they had left their horses. The wind was still blowing fiercely out of the west. The elderly hostler greeted them with a jerky nod, and Beau frowned as he sensed that something seemed to be making the man nervous. Or someone, Beau corrected himself, as three men slouched into the doorway behind him and Brubaker. Beau glanced over his shoulder at them and knew right away they seemed familiar. A second later, he understood why, as the man in the lead, a white-haired hombre with a seamed, weathered face, stepped forward.
I hear you two are lawmen from Arkansas. Is that right?
What business is that of yours, mister?
My name's Leander Staley. You killed my boys, Jink and Mort, and my nephew, Bob. Now that I've tracked you down, it's time for you to pay.
Brubaker hauled his gun out and commenced to shooting. Beau had no choice but to follow suit, since Staley and his two companions clawed their irons from leather and returned the fire. As Beau's Colt began to roar and buck in his hand, he angled to his left, away from Brubaker, who was lunging to the right. Splitting up like that kept their three opponents from concentrating their fire. Staley and his partners were spreading out too. One of them stumbled and clapped a hand to his side as a bullet ripped through it. That gave Brubaker the chance to put a well-placed slug through his head. Beau dropped to one knee behind a post holding up the stable's hayloft. It was meager cover, but better than nothing. He ducked as a bullet smacked into the post above his head. The Colt in his hand blasted again. The other younger man doubled over as Beau's bullet punched into his belly. That left Leander Staley still on his feet, and the vengeance-seeking old man was hit. Under his open coat, blood stood out on his flannel shirt like bright flowers in a couple of places. But he wasn't going down easily. The hatred he felt for Beau and Brubaker kept him upright. He was even able to stalk forward, still triggering his gun. Beau and the deputy fired at the same time, and that pair of slugs hammering into Staley's chest was finally enough to knock him down. Even when he was on the ground, though, Staley struggled to raise his gun and fire again. Brubaker, who was crouched near a parked wagon, straightened and strode over to him.
You killed my boys.
They had it coming, and so do you.
Brubaker lined his gun on Staley's face and clearly was about to pull the trigger again.
You'd be wasting a bullet, 42.
Yeah, I know. And now we're gonna have to waste time talking to the local law. They better not hold us until we can catch up to Morton and that girl.
Scratch and Kara camped on a high ridge that gave them a view of the countryside for several miles around. Scratch built a good-sized campfire that sent smoke climbing upward. He didn't know if Beau was already in these parts, but if that was the case, he might spot the smoke and realize that Scratch was sending him a signal. Things had changed by the next morning. The wind had been from the south the day before, continuing the warming trend. But by morning, it had turned around to the west. On the ridge, it was particularly strong, snatching Scratch's Stetson from his head when he went to saddle the horses. He had to run after the hat and catch it. Scratch pulled the Stetson down tighter on his head and frowned at her.
You won't think it's so funny when that dang wind blows you off your horse.
That's not gonna happen. We better have a cold camp this morning. With the wind blowing like that and as dry as everything is, it wouldn't take much to start a wildfire.
I'll miss my coffee, but maybe we can find a place later where we can risk a little fire. Like inside that cave of yours where the loot's hidden.
Yeah, that ought to be all right. Let's get on the trail. We've still got some jerky. We'll gnaw on that and call it breakfast.
The wind was cold in their faces as they rode west. Not icy, as it might have been, and the bright sunshine helped warm things up a little, but Scratch felt the chill in his bones anyway. By the middle of the day, the terrain had grown rougher, and they had to slow down their pace as they fought their way past gullies choked with dry brush, up rocky slopes where their horses' hooves slid on loose pebbles, and around rugged bluffs that were impossible to climb. At times, they made their way along dark, narrow valleys that seemed to be trying to close in on them. Atop the ridges on either side, the bare branches of dead trees waved in the wind and reminded Scratch of skeletal fingers clawing at the empty sky. He didn't know why such a grim thought crossed his mind, but once it did, he couldn't shake that ghastly image from his brain.
Any of this starting to look familiar to you?
It all looks familiar to me. Things weren't nearly as dry as the last time I was here. Another couple of hours and we'll be at the hideout. We've actually made pretty good time.
Sometime later, Scratch wasn't sure exactly how long. He lifted his head and sniffed.
You smell it too, don't you?
Yeah. Smoke.
They were down in a hollow and couldn't see very far. Scratch heeled his horse into a faster pace, and Kara did likewise. The smell of smoke grew stronger in the air as they trotted toward a rise about a quarter of a mile away. By the time they reached the top of that rise, Scratch wasn't surprised to see clouds of gray smoke billowing into the air in the distance. Both riders reined in sharply.
Damn it!
I reckon that was the way we were going.
That's the right direction. What I can't tell is how far away the fire is. I think it's on the other side of the hideout.
Maybe so, but the wind's blowing it this way mighty fast. You reckon we can get to the cave and get out before the fire reaches it?
I don't know, but I sure as hell intend to try.
She leaned forward in the saddle, jabbed her boot heels into the flanks of Bo's horse, and sent the animal lunging forward in a gallop.
Kara, dadgummit, come back here!
She was a good rider, and she maintained the short lead over him as she raced along draws, over ridges, and around jutting piles of rock. The pillar of smoke in the distance had climbed high enough into the sky that it was visible even when they were riding over lower terrain. The gray column stood out in sharp, menacing contrast to the bright blue sky. Scratch thought it was a little wider, too, which meant the leading edge of the fire was spreading out and growing broader. The air was so dry it tasted like dust in his mouth. That, combined with the high winds and the dead vegetation, was a recipe for pure, unadulterated hell. As they came out on the lip of a rise overlooking a valley, Kara hauled back on the reins and drew her horse to a stop. She leveled an arm and pointed at the long, rugged ridge on the other side of the valley, a couple of miles away.
The cave is in that ridge, and the fire is still on the other side of it. We can get the loot. Then we'll head east away from the fire.
Until it overtakes us. That wind is blowing faster than these horses can run.
We can make it. Come on!
She kicked the horse into a gallop again, taking the downward slope at a breakneck pace. Scratch rode after her. He couldn't help but keep casting glances at the steadily advancing smoke. He had caught up to Kara and was right behind her when she suddenly reined in. She jerked Bo's Winchester from the saddle boot.
What is
it? I saw somebody above us. Riders coming down this way.
Folks trying to get away from the fire, more than likely.
Maybe. Well, we're close to that cache now, and I don't trust anybody.
She jerked her horse toward a cluster of rock slabs that had slid down the face of the ridge in ages past.
We can hole up over here and bushwhack whoever it is.
Scratch wasn't of a mind to bushwhack anybody, but there was no point in arguing with Kara right now. Once she saw that those riders she had spotted weren't any threat to them, they could go on with their own business. Scratch followed Kara into the rocks. The smoke was getting thicker in the air. You didn't just smell it. Now it irritated the nose and the eyes and throat. The horses didn't like it either. They were getting harder to control. Scratch and Kara dismounted where they could watch the trail leading down from the ridge without being too noticeable themselves. Scratch hadn't seen the riders, but he trusted Kara's eyesight. His own eyes were starting to water a little from the smoke. After a moment, he caught the steady thud of hoofbeats. Someone was coming down the trail, all right. Kara lifted the Winchester. Her hands were tight on the weapon.
Whoever it is, they better not have gotten to that cache. I'll kill him before I let anybody steal my loot.
One by one, half a dozen riders came into view. As they drew closer, Scratch studied them intently. They were all rugged-looking, well-armed hombres. The man in the lead wore a flat-crowned black hat and a black vest over a white shirt. He had a hawk-like face and a dark mustache. Close behind him rode a burly man in a buckskin jacket. He was bareheaded and had a wild shock of long gray hair. The next man was lean, with red hair and a face like a fox. The other three were typical hard cases, roughly dressed and with several days' worth of stubble on their faces. Each of those three was leading a pack horse. Scratch had never seen any of the men before. That wasn't the case with Kara, though. A shock went through him as he realized that she was staring at the men in stunned recognition, especially the man riding in the lead.
Hank! Over here, Hank!
The words were barely out of her mouth when she swung the rifle in her hands towards Scratch.